This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to Raw Beauty Talks. I'm your host, Erin Treloar. Ready to peer behind the highlight reel and all those polished pictures of the world's biggest influencers and wellness experts? We're going to uncover what beauty, health, and wellness truly means in today's world. As someone who really struggled with disordered eating and negative body image, I became a health coach because I'm passionate about redefining health and wellness so that it's less about the weight on the scale and more about how we feel. Let's pull back the curtain for some raw beauty talks.
Hey, Raw Beauty Crew, I hope you are having a beautiful day wherever you are. And even if you're not, I want to remind you of one of my favorite mantras or a saying that I repeat to myself over and over and over again, whether I'm in a great moment or a challenging moment. And that is to be where your feet are. Be where your feet are. So whatever you're experiencing today, can you give yourself permission to be right there? That is where the lessons are. That is where the goodness is. The moment we start wishing that moment away or we desire to be somewhere else, that is where suffering begins. So if you were to just take a nice deep inhale with me and a nice exhale and just imagine really owning this concept of being where your feet are right now, really being present right there. All right. I'm thrilled to have today's guest joining me today. She flew all the way to Vancouver to have this conversation in person, and I am so glad we had time together because, to be honest, the topic that we're discussing, hormone health, isn't something that I feel very well versed in. And I honestly haven't had a ton of conversations where we've gone this in depth and this in detail. Now, I've worked with many women who are struggling with their hormones, whether they feel that they are having thyroid issues, they can't lose weight, even though they're doing all of the things, women struggling with PCOS, individuals trying to get pregnant and on their fertility journey, individuals who are experiencing really crazy PMS symptoms. All of these can be linked back to our hormone health. And as you'll discover in this episode with Lauren, our hormones are all very interconnected. So I'm not going to give away too much because Lauren is the expert here. And oh my goodness, she blew me away with all of the knowledge that she shared. Lauren Papanos is a nationally recognized nutrition expert. She's a registered dietitian, a nutritionist, a hormone specialist. She has her own podcast. She's a published nutrition researcher and has over 7 years of experience working in this field. Lauren and I dive into a number of things. We talk about signs that you may have a hormone imbalance. She gives us a little hormone one-on-one, an explanation of what hormones are, how many different types of hormones there are, and then we talk about sort of the key ones in the body and the function that they serve. She also talks to us about some common diet culture trends, intermittent fasting and Ozempic, for example, and shares her opinion on how they can impact our hormones. Now, as you're listening to this episode, one of the paradigms of wellness that I practice within is that every single body is different and everybody is going to need something different on their wellness journey. So you may listen to this and maybe you're doing intermittent fasting and you do feel like it's really working for you, then carry on. You know, the information that she's providing here, I think, is stuff that isn't necessarily talked about all the time. So I feel it's really important to address it, especially for women who are intermittent fasting, because it can have an impact on your hormones. And then, of course, with any type of diet where we're restricting, we are putting ourselves at risk for ending up binging down the road. So just being mindful of that. But at the end of the day, this isn't an episode against intermittent fasting. We're just providing more information. Lauren shares her thoughts on Ozempic and discusses signs or symptoms you may be experiencing if you perhaps have a hormone imbalance. She also shares some really practical steps that you can take to support hormone health. And whether you have a hormone imbalance or not, These are all beautiful practices to lean into. So grab your notepad or your coffee, hit the road for a walk, and let's dive in. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
So before we dive into the nitty-gritty and tools and practices and a deeper understanding of what our hormones even are and why they matter, could you give us a little bit of background as to how you landed here right now?
Yeah, definitely. So I am a registered dietitian by trade, went to school, you know, got my degrees in nutrition sciences, and then my master's degree, I was exposed to the world of integrative and functional medicine and saw that there was a different way to think about healing the body. Because even in school as a registered dietitian, like, we're taught to treat medical conditions with nutrition, but it's more so of like, okay, someone has heart disease, you put them on this dietary framework, mm-hmm. right? Versus with an integrative and functional approach, we're looking at what's the root cause of why these conditions developed in the mm-hmm. first place, of why these symptoms are there, and really treating the patient as a whole. And so that's where I was exposed to it. And it just so happened that during that time, I was also dealing with my own health issues. And a lot of those were hormonal in nature. I grew up a gymnast, then went to school on a college cheer scholarship. And I was following a lot of the nutrition things I was learning in school about eating more whole foods and about intermittent fasting and all these things. And I didn't realize the context that was specific to me, which with my high energy needs, that was a recipe for really hormonal disaster and kind of took me into this like 4-year spiral of my hormones just going completely crazy. And so when I was done with school and I was getting my RD credential, I was trying to see all these different types of healthcare providers to get answers and healing, and mm-hmm. no one could help me. Everyone was like, we don't know why this is happening. You're not fitting the typical textbook of these different conditions. Mm-hmm. At first, I was like diagnosed with PCOS, and then they came back on it and said like, no, this actually doesn't look like a typical PCOS case. And so ultimately, I realized like I had to take matters to my own hands and mm-hmm. figure out how to heal myself, because no one was really that committed to helping heal me. And it just so happened that a year later, I ended up getting a job in a athletic department. And one of my responsibilities in that job was to do research. And the physician that I was doing research with, she was an expert in female athlete triad, which is a hormonal imbalance that happens in a lot of women athletes. Mm-hmm. And so I started to dive into endocrinology and the interplay with nutrition and how that impacts day-to-day function, injury risk, body composition, all of those things. And I was just like completely blown away by the impact that it was having on so many people's lives. And so I ultimately ended up leaving athletics and starting my private practice so that I could impact women of all ages and backgrounds that are dealing with hormonal imbalances, that they're just not getting the answers and the healing that they need.
Oh, I love that your story, like so many others, and I feel like often the best practitioners out there have in some way struggled with whatever it is that they're now helping with in some way, mm-hmm. shape, or form. And that's obviously your story too. I want to just rewind a little bit. You said that you weren't feeling your best. Like, what did that look like for you? What were some of the symptoms that you were noticing that led you to even go to the doctor in the first place?
Yeah. Well, I was at the peak where I was actually feeling my best. I was looking my best. Mm-hmm. I was performing my best. And I was like, oh my gosh, all I did was clean up my diet and all of these variables improved. And then that probably went on for about 6 months. And then all of a sudden, it was like the complete opposite started to happen. I started to deal with all of these food sensitivities. I mm-hmm. felt like I couldn't eat anything without getting so uncomfortably bloated, having all these gut issues. My skin started going crazy. I'd never had skin issues in my life. I was starting mm-hmm. to deal with like this weird acne type issues. So having a lot of like puffiness and swelling. And then I wasn't having a period. My like period started to become irregular. And then I just stopped having a period. And I knew that that wasn't good, that that was really problematic. And so those were kind of like the physical symptoms, but like internally they were manifesting as a lot of anxiety and yeah. worry about what does this mean for me right now in terms of my health, but also what does this mean for me for the future? Like, am I going to be able to have kids one day? Am I going to have an increased risk of heart disease? Because we know that women that don't have menstrual cycles regularly have an increased risk for heart disease, right? So all of the emotional piece of it started to manifest at the same time.
Wow. Okay. And then you go to the doctor. And one of the things that I always say is that it's so important to remember that you are your number one health authority. There are tons of people, myself included, you included, who want the very best for our clients, for people out there, but you are the only one who knows what is happening in your body, what you are experiencing, what's working, what's not working. And especially in today's day and age when so many people can kind of question you or you can wonder whether or not what you're experiencing is real or not, it's just so important to remember that if you feel like something is off, you're most likely right. Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals for a second. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that really don't help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversation, and Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teachings so you're ready to practice what you learned in the real world. If you're heading to another country anytime soon, start using Babbel a few weeks before you go to learn basics like how to order food, ask for directions, speak to merchants without having to consult language apps while you're away. So fun. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. Get 55% off at babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. That's spelled babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. Rules and restrictions may apply. This episode is brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history. We all put our hair through the ringer. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm. Enter LolaVie's bestsellers, the Glossing Detangler and the Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. They're your hair's new best friends. For a limited time, you get 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use the code RAWBEAUTYTALKS at checkout. LolaVie is all about naturally derived plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten. And of course, cruelty-free and vegan. That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code RAWBEAUTYTALKS. You can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Tell them I sent you over. So, talk to me a little bit about hormones in general. Mm-hmm. Obviously, females' hormones are so different than a male's hormones, and they're more complicated. Mm-hmm. So, talk to me a little bit about hormones and the basics of hormones, what healthy hormones look like, and common issues that you see arise with hormones.
Yeah. So, I know that when I was just starting to dive into hormones, that I always thought that hormones really just meant sex hormones, that it just meant estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. That was kind of the basics of hormones, right? And then I started to really learn that we actually have a lot more hormones. So, you know, we learned about, like in school, I learned about hunger hormones and insulin, which is our like blood sugar hormone, if you will. But we also have things like thyroid hormones. We have so many, we have over 50 hormones in the body. And honestly, they're finding new ones every year. And hormones really work as chemical messengers between different tissues and organs in the body. So what they're responsible for is kind of communicating like the environment of what's going on to really connect the dots in our body. So for example, the brain is where a lot of your hormone control center lives, and your brain then communicates with places like your thyroid, with your adrenal glands, with your ovaries, and then there's a negative feedback loop. So then those organs make hormones, and then that hormonal response that happens from these organs then gets communicated back up to the brain, and then it continues this cycle, right? And all of our endocrine system's connected. So that's why if we just look at it in silo and we're just thinking about, well, what's going on with my estrogen progesterone levels, it's not the full piece of the picture, because your estrogen progesterone levels influence your adrenal hormone levels, which influence your thyroid hormone levels, and then they all
so on
influence
so
each
forth.
Other. Yes, exactly. So it's all interconnected. And that's where really taking an integrative functional approach to it is so important, because you can't treat hormones in silo. They really have to be addressed and treated as like this holistic view of how everything is interconnected in the body.
So
there are a lot of conversations in my friend group right now about perimenopause and mm-hmm. people starting progesterone treatment. Mm-hmm. So would you say that that is treating a hormone in a silo if we just start slapping progesterone cream on our inner thighs? We're not necessarily looking at all of these other functions that are going on, which is something that you would do. Yeah. You would look at it, the whole picture.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, with menopause, for example, we know that the ovaries essentially stop making hormones. They stop mm-hmm. making estrogen, progesterone quite at the levels that they were when you were in your reproductive years. But we also know that perimenopause, that there's a lot of activation of the nervous system. So the nervous system is a lot more fragile, if you will. Mm-hmm. And your adrenal hormones and thyroid hormones heavily influence your progesterone levels. Mm-hmm. So a lot of women jump the gun and they just start on progesterone replacement, but it doesn't actually address, well, why are the progesterone levels already tanking? Mm-hmm. What can we do within the adrenal hormones, the thyroid hormones, to be able to actually support the body's production of progesterone mm-hmm. before all of these hormones go offline? And then once they do, again, there's still a lot of things that we want to take into account at that point when someone is menopausal, because now you're in a lower hormone state. Mm-hmm. And we know that, for example, when like estrogen levels drop, that increases your level of inflammation in the body, increases brain fog and cognitive decline. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that we can do to support individuals depending on what situation they're in hormonally.
Okay. We've essentially got this plethora of different hormones. We're still learning about the body. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise, shocking. That we have over 50 different types of hormones and that they are all connected to one another. They're all speaking to one another and speaking within the body. What are some of the common issues that can arise or common things that you see when our hormones are out of balance?
There can be so many different types of hormone imbalances. And I think it's really important to first and foremost just mention that your hormones are never going to be completely perfect, right? And just like with anything else in the human body, it's going to ebb and it's going to flow, right? It's going to change on a day-to-day, a monthly basis. And what we want to establish is what is the right balance for you individually that makes everything in your body work its best mm-hmm. and that also makes you feel your best. So I think that's really important to note, because some women's hormone levels are going to look a little bit different, but they might feel their best at a different hormone level than someone else, right? But I would say most commonly what I see is low progesterone levels mm-hmm. in women that are of age where they should be making adequate progesterone. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that so many women are in fight or flight. And this fight or flight can be because there's nutrient deficiencies, because of things like intermittent fasting that a lot of women are doing, under eating, over exercising, this like hustle culture mentality, right? Mm. That a lot of individuals are feeding into. And that is really a recipe for making more cortisol, which is our stress hormone, and taking away those resources that should be going to our sex hormones like progesterone. Mm. So a lot of women end up with low progesterone levels, and they're not having ovulatory cycles. And then this is leading to things, what we call like estrogen dominance, where now estrogen is in high levels. It's a dominant hormone because there's not enough progesterone there to counterbalance it. And progesterone helps feed our thyroid hormones. And we start to see that there's issues happening with women's thyroid hormones, or vice versa, that women have thyroid issues. You know, we know that thyroid issues are the most common in women, and that these thyroid issues start to show up as progesterone issues. So it can be what came first, the chicken or the egg. Is it the mm-hmm. progesterone that's causing the thyroid issue? Is it thyroid issues causing the progesterone? But that's really where we like go back in time and figure out, okay, when did your symptoms first start? What was the catalyst that caused these symptoms to begin in the first place?
Right. So low progesterone due to stress or poor nutrition or a plethora of different things that could mm-hmm. be happening can impact the thyroid, or vice versa. If the thyroid hormones are off, it can also impact our progesterone levels. So when your progesterone is low, what else might people be noticing? And when thyroid hormones aren't functioning optimally, what do you start to see?
So anxiety is definitely going to be one of the most common symptoms with low progesterone. Another one could be difficulty sleeping. Progesterone is our chill hormone. And so when we don't have enough levels of progesterone, not only are we going to have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, but mm-hmm. we're also going to have difficulty with relaxing. So progesterone really calms down our nervous system. It helps get us into that parasympathetic mode. And it helps to really be able to counterbalance estrogen. It's very very easy. It's much easier for our body to make estrogen than it is to make progesterone. And so it really becomes problematic when we don't have enough progesterone there to counterbalance it. It could also present for women as irregular cycles. Mm-hmm. So for a big chunk of women of reproductive age, PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, is a common endocrine hormone and metabolic condition that we see. And a lot of women that have PCOS also have low progesterone levels. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because they have high amounts of androgens, which are male-like hormones, things like testosterone, that also can block progesterone. And so, you know, one of the hallmark causes, or I guess things you can see with low progesterone, is just anovulatory cycles. Mm-hmm. So some women, they might not have a period. Other women, they might be having a period, but they're not ovulating. And so if you're not ovulating, you're not making progesterone. And progesterone, it has a name for a reason, progestation. Progesterone is our fertility hormone, and your body has to make adequate progesterone that first trimester. So we'll see a lot of issues with difficulty conceiving when women have inadequate levels of progesterone.
Right. I had two early chemical pregnancies. Mm-hmm. And they figured that I was experiencing those losses because of low progesterone. Mm-hmm. So this is so interesting,
yeah,
how it all fits together. Now, what is estrogen responsible for?
Estrogen it's probably one of my favorite hormones, honestly, mm-hmm. because it's really incredible what it does. We have receptors for hormones all over our body, but estrogen receptors are in our brain, for example. And so estrogen has an incredible role in our cognitive function. It not only helps with preventing things like brain fog, but it also helps with preventing depression. So on the other end of the spectrum of anxiety, right, mm-hmm. would be like depression. And that's mm-hmm. estrogen is incredibly important for that. And that's one of the reasons why when women go through menopause, or right before you start your period, you typically notice an uptick in sadness. A lot of women postmenopausal complain of things like depression and brain fog because estrogen is so important for our brain. Mm. So it plays an incredible role in our brain. It also plays an incredible role in our cardiovascular health. So I mentioned how when I wasn't having a cycle, that was very alarming to me, because we know that we have estrogen receptors in the heart as well. Mm. And that estrogen is very cardioprotective. It helps to be able to keep our blood vessels elastic, helps to be able to keep our blood pressure nice and healthy. Again, that could be problematic, especially if someone has a family history of cardiovascular disease, which is the number one killer, at least in the US, for both men and women. So it's really important for the heart. It's also really important for the bone. And that was where a lot of the research that I was doing when I was working in athletics was we were looking at low estrogen states and the risk for bone stress injuries. But estrogen can also not just be problematic for bone stress injuries, but also for things like osteoporosis and osteopenia, which a lot of women deal with mm-hmm. postmenopausal, especially, mm-hmm. again, because it's a low estrogen state. But I would say my favorite thing about estrogen is that it's also anti-inflammatory. So another reason why, once, you know, women start to see low estrogen levels, why they start to deal with a lot more inflammatory symptoms. Mm-hmm. And inflammation can be very broad, but that could show up as things like the brain fog we're talking about. It could be like puffiness, water retention, swelling. It could be that you're having joint pain, right? A lot of these inflammatory symptoms can be because of inadequate levels of estrogen.
One of the things that comes up a lot in the Food Freedom Program, in my one-on-one coaching sessions for women, that I imagine is deeply tied to hormones, is low libido. Mm. Where does low libido fit into all of this conversation?
Low libido can have so many underlying causes, mm-hmm. and you know, one of those is that high stress state, so high cortisol levels. And again, we talked a little bit about like the role of the nervous system and the mm-hmm. factors that influence that. But the nervous system can be a big piece of libido. Your body's not wanting to reproduce when it's trying to run from a tiger.
Exactly.
Right? So you're not going to have a great libido if your body's feeling scared mm-hmm. and stressed. Mm-hmm. So that's one piece. You know, we know testosterone, for example, is really important for libido. And we see low testosterone pretty common in women as well. And so that can be a culprit. Estrogen is also important for libido, and it's also really important for preventing things like vaginal atrophy and vaginal dryness, which can go into the bigger picture of libido as well, right? And so sometimes estrogen is actually what is driving more of like sexual dysfunction, but also even things like vaginal infections. So like we see a lot of women that have recurrent like bacterial vaginosis mm-hmm. and things of that sort, right? And that can impact libido as well. And sometimes it can be rooted in issues with estrogen levels.
Okay. Wow. So what we're hearing is that our hormones are really important, intricate. They're all linked to one another. why are so many women, because I can guarantee that almost everyone listening to this right now is going to be like, my hormone levels are effed. I need Lauren in my life. Why are our hormones so out of whack right now?
I think there's a couple of things when we really look at, okay, what has changed? Why is there an uptick in so many hormone problems? I think first and foremost is just more awareness and more understanding, more research that is being done in women to really understand the role of hormones and how prevalent these endocrine hormone conditions are. So I think awareness is part of why they're so relevant. But in terms of the causes, I think one of them is our food system and that, you know, our soil is so incredibly depleted of minerals, and minerals are like these little spark plugs for our hormones that are really activating and converting hormones and are really responsible for how hormones function in our body. And we are not getting the mineral content from the soil that we once were. We know that like the magnesium content of our soil is significantly less than it was back in the 1950s, for example. We also, you know, are seeing an uptick in convenience and processed foods. And I'm all for finding ways that are functional to your life because we all live such like busy, fast lives. But I also believe that there's a lot of healthy kind of glorification of foods that actually are processed and devoid of nutrients. So even if you're eating something that has minimal preservatives and fillers in it, is it giving you the magnesium, the zinc, the selenium content that having the actual like living version of that would contain? Right. And these minerals are like the building blocks for our ability to make and convert hormones. So I think part of it is our food system and just that shift that we've seen happen. We also know the rampant amount of endocrine disrupting chemicals that are out there. And these are not just in our food and everything from like herbicides that are on, you know, glyphosate that's on like our corn and our wheat and our soy products, but also on things like our beauty products and our living essentials, you know, what we're cooking our food in, what we're storing our food in, what we're putting on our skin. And all of those, they're called endocrine disruptors for a reason because they disrupt our endocrine system, and they do it by actually displacing the ability for the hormones our body's making to be able to bind to the receptors. So like we don't just make hormones. Then once you make hormones, they actually have to like lock and key into the right place to have a role. So, you know, we've got to get that estrogen onto our ovarian receptors, and then that key, which is like the estrogen, has to turn that lock in our ovaries to really make that estrogen work on our ovarian system. And these endocrine disruptors work by literally displacing that lock so that that key doesn't fit anymore.
Wow.
And then maybe you don't have changes in your hormone levels, but you have changes in how your hormones are actually playing a role in impacting your day-to-day function.
What are some of the biggest endocrine disruptors that you see women frequently using that obviously hearing this can feel in moments overwhelming? Like I need to go home and replace all of my cleaning products and every single makeup product that I have and my shampoo and everything. What are some of the more common ones that you feel like have the biggest impact?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good point in that we're never going to get away from these things in just like our current day and age, right? So I think it's important for people to be educated on where the common sources are and where they can do their best, but also to just be mindful that in our current day-to-day, like we're probably going to have to support our detoxification systems so that our body is constantly able to naturally remove of these endocrine disruptors because our body has systems in place. That's what our liver and our kidneys are for. But we need support in those areas so that we can get this excess out, right? But I would say in terms of like the most common, I mean, glyphosate is a huge herbicide that's used on all the subsidized crops, really. And glyphosate can even spray and it can impact other crops that they're not even using glyphosate on. But, you know, corn, wheat, soy, those are the common glyphosate crops. Chickpeas are also common. There are companies that do tests for glyphosate, and you can look for that when you're purchasing those items at the store. But I would say across the board, when I do endocrine disrupting chemical testing on individuals, even people that are eating totally organic, that are like buying glyphosate free things, almost always come back high in glyphosate. Yeah. And that's just from, you know, travel, eating out every so often, that spray contamination that can happen. So it almost is ubiquitous and impossible to avoid. I would say parabens and phthalates are the next most common. And these are going to be things that we find in fragrance products, in plastic containing products, our nonstick, you know, pans. So we really want to get back to basics on what were we using 60 years ago? Mm-hmm. We were using cast iron skillets mm-hmm. and stainless steel that's very durable. We were using glass to store things. And the more that we move away from that and we move to things that are made from plastic, that are artificially fragranced, the more that we increase the risk of endocrine disrupting chemicals being utilized.
Okay. One of the things that I've made a change on is that I no longer wear the perfumes that I used to wear mm-hmm. in my 20s, which is sad because I love those scents, but also it is just spraying pure chemical
yeah.
on your body. And then just being a bit more mindful about things like our shampoos, our body washes, that type of thing. But our home isn't perfect by any means. And I still like to spray my toilet with a Vim cleaner. I'm not even going to say that ashamed. Like, I want a good hardcore cleaner in my toilet bowl, even if you don't need it. So I guess what I want to say for everyone listening right now is there one thing that you could work on identifying in your home and as you need to replace it, just upgrading it with something that is going to be a little bit more safe for your endocrine system, something that is paraben or phthalate free, starting to move over into more glass products, being aware of when you're using plastic, et cetera, yeah. et cetera.
Yeah, I think starting with the things that someone uses the most often mm-hmm. in the week, where that's where you're going to get the mm-hmm. most exposure. So if you use the same makeup every single day, maybe start there. Or if you use the same toothpaste twice per day, start there, right? So think about like those top five things that you use in all of these areas the most often. And I think that's where I would start.
Yeah, that's a great tip. Okay, so you mentioned soil and the degradation of our soil. Would you recommend shopping organic when possible?
I think that organic does help, but there's still even issues with that, right? And that with organic, for example, like heavy metals are a big issue for thyroid issues like hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's. And organic doesn't change the heavy metal content. Sometimes it actually makes the heavy metal content higher because then they're not using herbicides or not as much to be able to like control for how things are being grown, right? So organic, definitely we know that there's an increase in mineral content, that they are more nutrient rich. Mm-hmm. But I would even start with trying to buy as local as possible, whether that's through a local farm or a farmer's market. If you have access to that, the more local we can buy, not only the less herbicides and things are used, generally speaking, because they're not having to preserve the food, right, to be able to ship it to you. But it's also going to be much higher in nutrient quality because it's picked at the peak ripeness.
Right.
And you're going to get more of those vitamins and minerals in that food.
Okay. I love that. So shopping local, starting to look at maybe one or two products that you could swap out or replace and just continuing to add on to that. I want to talk about diet, because this is obviously a hot topic on this show, and it was something that led you to a place of struggle. And let's dive specifically into intermittent fasting, because there's just so much information out there about how we should be eating, what's the right way of eating. Talk to us a little bit about intermittent fasting and how that impacts the endocrine system.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the issues with intermittent fasting is that the research was extrapolated from animal models into humans, and they've found that animals, rats that they did this research in, they have completely different metabolic systems than us as humans do. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the research, because how research works is they always start in animal models, and then once they get the good data and it's safe, then they move it over to human models. And then if that gets replicated, then that's hopefully where we make modifications to our recommendations, right, for a patient. But what happened was that a lot of the research that was done in these animal models just got extrapolated over to humans. But then when they actually tested it in humans, they didn't see the same results. They saw that actually animals respond completely different to the effects of intermittent fasting than do humans. So that's one problem with a lot of the research. Second one is that the research that was done in humans, most of it was done in men. Mm-hmm. And so we have very different hormonal systems, women and men. And so we can't extrapolate that research from men and say the same thing is going to work in women. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of the research has been done, especially as it relates to hormones. It's been done in men because there just hasn't been a lot of funding done for women's health research. And it's much harder for them to control for research in women because of the menstrual cycle.
Right.
So there's there's unfortunately not a ton of research that's done in women, especially as it relates to nutrition. So that's...
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So we are already at that disadvantage. But what the benefits of intermittent fasting are is the benefits to our mitochondrial function. Mm-hmm. So our mitochondria are where all of our hormone system really initiates. Our mitochondria are part of our cells, and we have them in every cell of our body for the most part. And this is really where things like your cholesterol get turned into making things like DHEA and progesterone, mm-hmm. and where all of this hormone cascade initiates is in our mitochondria. And so the benefits of intermittent fasting were, okay, we see some benefit to mitochondrial function, so that must mean that it's improving hormone function. But that's where when they replicated it in humans, they didn't see that. They didn't see that the same benefits to mitochondrial function actually happen in humans. Where the most benefit happens to mitochondrial function is through exercise. And so if you are exercising regularly, you are getting all of the benefits to your mitochondrial function. You do not need to be intermittent fasting as well. Mm-hmm. It's like 20% of the effect you're going to get from exercise, right? Like the effect of exercise is so much more significant for your mitochondria that really that's where we should be spending our time and energy. And there's a lot of things we can do within like our lifestyle, like endocrine disrupting chemicals impact our mitochondrial function, mm-hmm. nutrition impacts our mitochondrial function as well. But really, if you had to focus on one, I would say focus your energy more on exercise. And if you're not able to exercise, if you have some type of health condition that limits your ability to exercise, then focus on the nutrition and the endocrine disruptors, yep. because those are going to play a really significant role in how your mitochondria function.
Yes. And remember that when we're saying exercise, that you can start with walking. You can start with putting on a good podcast, putting on music, getting up right now, wherever you're listening, and just going for a walk. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful place to start.
Walking is one of the best types of exercise, mm-hmm. honestly. So yeah, it's a great place to start.
What are your thoughts on intermittent fasting in regards to how it impacts the health of our hormones?
I think there's a couple of areas it can negatively impact our hormones. First and foremost, as I mentioned, our hormones are all interconnected. And one of the big issues we see with intermittent fasting is that you're going extended time periods without eating. And when that is happening, your body is burning through glycogen, it's burning through carbohydrates that it has in storage. And eventually what will happen is that you'll get into a low blood sugar state called hypoglycemia. A lot of people might be familiar with this. It's that feeling of hangry, like I need to eat immediately, I need sugar, I need salt, I need immediate energy supply, right? And it's a survival response by the body. And so your body will preferentially make cortisol, because cortisol is how our body then mobilizes what we have in storage so that we can get those sugar levels back up. And sometimes this happens to people even when they're sleeping. And this can be why you're waking up a lot in the middle of the night and people don't realize that. But it often happens when women are going extended periods of time, especially without eating. And when we get into this hypoglycemic state, our body releases this cortisol, this stress hormone. Then that can impact our ability to make things like progesterone, because then those resources that should be going to progesterone mm-hmm. are going to making more cortisol. And so if you do this day in and day out, you can see how you're taking those resources away from making crucial things like progesterone. Also, intermittent fasting, especially if you're in a caloric deficit, which means that you are not eating to meet your body's energy needs, we know that it downregulates thyroid hormones. And so one of the big issues we see with a lot of women that are dealing with these low thyroid symptoms that aren't getting diagnoses of things like hypothyroidism, right? They're going to their doctor. They're like, I can't lose weight, or I'm feeling bloated all the time. I'm having so much brain fog. Their doctor runs her TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. It comes back normal. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, then what gives? Why do I still feel this way and have all these symptoms? And that's because their active level of thyroid hormone, which is free T3, is actually where things are low. And free T3 is most affected by nutritional status. So we see that when women intermittent fast and their body's in this hypoglycemic state, their body's in this stress response, it actually decreases the amount of active thyroid hormones. And those active thyroid hormones are what regulates the speed of digestion, the growth of your hair, even fertility.
Wow.
All of these factors. It's not TSH. TSH is actually not even a thyroid hormone. It's a brain hormone. And so TSH is just the communication between your brain and your thyroid. But that free T3 is what is actually playing a role in how all of these different metabolic processes in the body work. And so we've seen in the research that this actually affects women more than it does men, that women are more affected as it relates to this downregulation of thyroid hormones. So a drop in, thyroid hormone activity, an increase in cortisol levels, which can then create its own problems downstream with things like progesterone and so forth. You know, with intermittent fasting, for some people that may be insulin resistant, where their body is no longer responding to the effects of the hormone insulin, insulin's role is to take the carbohydrate that we eat that gets broken down in our bloodstream and to bring that sugar into the cells that utilize it, mainly things like our brain, our muscle, and our liver. So when our body is insulin resistant, that process isn't happening as efficiently as it should be. That sugar is just like hanging out. It's not getting to where it needs to go. That insulin, think of it as like the car that's driving the goods all throughout the body, right? To get the energy it needs. The body is kind of starved of energy. It's not getting that energy supply that it needs. And so intermittent fasting can sometimes help with lowering insulin resistance because people that are insulin resistant, they have too much carbohydrate in their bloodstream, right? And so we might want a bit of a different effect to happen than like the hypoglycemic state that we're talking about. But really, we only see that in older individuals. Like I've never seen intermittent fasting to be beneficial for all of the insulin benefits without causing harm to things like cortisol, progesterone, and thyroid hormone levels.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's where context really is so important because there's so many hormones that get impacted in the process, and how everyone gets impacted is going to look different based off of your age, your personal needs, your dietary history, all of these factors.
So with your training, with your level of awareness, with all of the clients that you have worked with, you would not recommend intermittent fasting for women?
No.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. I think there's certain situations where, you know, if you were to, if everything, all factors are controlled for, everything looks good, you know, there's no stress response in the body and you fast every so often, it's probably not going to be the straw that broke the camel's back, right?
Yes.
Because it's not what we do 10% of the time, it's what we do 90% of the time.
Yes.
But most women don't have that like wiggle room. Most women don't have that ability to do something like a fast and it not cause these hormonal disruptions because of the lifestyle and the day-to-day demands that their body's under.
Mm.
Unfortunately, I see a lot of women in perimenopause, intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's like some guru that they're all listening to that's telling them to intermittent fast, but it's like the recipe for disaster, in my opinion, because that's when your nervous system, like we know that perimenopause is when the nervous system is the most sensitive. And so women are already in like a naturally fight or flight state. That's like what your body hormonally is pushing you into. And then you add fasting to the mix, which further increases cortisol, puts you more into a fight or flight state. And then you can imagine where that gets you.
I'm already not excited for that stage of life and really doing a lot of training with my nervous system to gear up for it. But you're right. It's just putting more stress on an already stressed system.
Yeah.
I think intermittent fasting is like so many other different forms of diets that we hear about where it gives women some and men some sort of structure to work within, right? It's like, okay, with any diet that we're looking at, as in diet culture diets, not just the assortment of foods that we're eating, it's always about removing some sort of food group, reducing the amount of time that we're eating. In whatever way, shape, or form, we're putting up some guidelines for individuals, which feels really helpful and feels really safe in this world where people are feeling incredibly overwhelmed about what to put in their body, how to put it in their body. They're experiencing symptoms like inflammation and weight gain and fogginess, and they're looking for answers. And then we hear on podcasts or we see in articles that intermittent fasting is working for everyone, and we jump on board, right? And so I'm curious, what would your recommendations be for somebody who is starting to experience symptoms or they're feeling uncomfortable in their body? What foods are they eating? When are we eating for optimal health? Is this different for every body?
Yeah. It really truly depends, you know, on so many factors in terms of what is your biology? What is your genetics? What are your goals? What does your lifestyle look like, right? There's so many factors to take into account with how your day-to-day diet should look. And even when we're working with clients, we might have them doing something different the first month that we're working together because we're doing something for treatment purposes. We're doing something to shift how a process in the body is working, but that's not the same thing that they're going to be doing by the end of working with us, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And this could be food, supplement, exercise related. So those recommendations might shift based off of what your body needs, but ultimately it's to get you to the place of better health so that you can create a very seamless lifestyle plan that works for you and then is very easy to implement. Mm-hmm. But when clients come to work with us and they feel that overwhelmed, that's one of the reasons why we always start with testing, is because it really helps us to understand what your body looks like under the hood. We can look at things like genetics. We can look at your individual hormone levels, your individual vitamin nutrient levels, and we can see where are your individual imbalances? Where do you need to focus more of your energy? And then we can create a personalized plan that's based off of all of those factors taken into account, and that takes into account like your lifestyle and how are you going to implement these things. And it really helps, I think, take a lot of the dietary dogma out of the picture, because so much of people, everyone's trying to find like the perfect next diet. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that we don't achieve health until we can actually find like what's the best way to nourish our own bio-individuality. Because once we understand that this is what I need to do for my own individual body, it's a lot easier that when you go to lunch with your girlfriend and she's telling you she's intermittent fasting, for you to not care. Yes. Because you're like, that's great for you. That's what you're doing. But that's not what's best for me. And I know it's not what's best for me because I've tried it. I've seen what works. I know what works best for me. I feel really confident in my approach and I feel really good with what I'm doing. And so it allows you to have more confidence in the way that you eat and not worry so much about all of this like new information that you were constantly being flooded with.
I love that. Every single body is really different and mm-hmm. everybody's needs are different. And the way that people intermittent fast will be different as well. You could have somebody who intermittent fasts and what they're eating during their eating window could be vastly different than the next person. And the types of foods that each individual needs could be vastly different. So it really is about this journey of wellness, of nourishing your unique body. And I can guarantee for everyone listening, there are already a lot of things that you know. You have an idea of which foods upset your tummy mm-hmm. and give you a headache and make you feel gassy and crampy. And you have an idea of how often you need to eat. I'm somebody, I can't cut out carbs. It does not work for my body. Mm-hmm. What have you noticed and what have you found works well for you as an individual?
Yeah, I would agree. I'm very similar with that in that I don't do well with super low carbohydrate eating. I tried it at one point in my early 20s as mm-hmm. I was trying to recover my period and thought maybe if I eat a bunch of fat, because fat's how we make cholesterol, which is how we make hormones, that's going to be the golden ticket. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. So yeah, I found that having a balanced amount of carbohydrate in my diet is important. I also really try to prioritize, I call it like a metabolic Mediterranean way of eating, mm-hmm. but that isn't just the food sources in terms of like what I'm consuming, but also how. So it's like slowing down, being more present at meals, cooking, like not trying to always go for convenience options, even though I still lean on them when I need them, travel, whatever it might be. I really try to focus on cooking like real nourishing foods. I use a lot of antioxidants and like, you know, vitamin E and minerals and things in the cooking process, a lot of fresh herbs, because they're providing different food as medicine properties for healing, you know, like things like cilantro and parsley, they're natural heavy metal chelators. And like, I have a history of hypothyroidism. So making sure that I always have a chelator in the mix is really important because it's helping to be able to prevent any issues with heavy metal toxicity from happening in the future. So it's really trying to find like, what does your bio-individuality need? And then how can you do this in a way that's really nourishing for you? And we were even talking about before we started recording, right, is that I'm not going to take out things from my diet that bring me joy. Right. So it's finding that balance of like, how do I nourish my body? Because this is what my hormones need to be at their healthiest place that I feel my best every day. But then also honoring that there's some things that I want to do, not because they're healthy for me, but because they're bringing me joy.
Yes.
And that's also equally as important as doing things that are internally shifting how your body is working.
Mm, I think it's so important. And spoiler alert, she was drinking a very big coffee because she had a terrible sleep last night. All of these things, which are hormone disruptors, but you can't aim for perfection in this pursuit. Whenever we're doing anything or taking any steps in improving our wellness, I really like to think, is this something that I could do for a lifetime? And, you know, maybe there's tweaks you have to do for a couple of months to right the ship or change hormone levels in one way, shape, or form. But really what we're aiming for is a really sustainable lifestyle in the choices that we're making. Okay, so a couple of things that you've mentioned specifically to support our hormone health are choosing to purchase local foods whenever possible, being aware of endocrine disruptors in our home and that we're putting on our body or ingesting. You mentioned slowing down our eating, practicing mindfulness as we eat, cooking our foods. I think that one is so important, and it extends beyond just what we're eating, but also our way of being in life. We are so jam-packed in our schedules and racing from one thing to another. And I don't want you to become stressed about being stressed, if that makes sense. But again, an invitation to really ask yourself if what's going on in your life right now is working and where there might be opportunities to clear some space in the calendar, to do some breathing, to get to a yoga class that really gives you permission to soften a bit. Any other suggestions that are sort of blanket solutions for optimal hormone health?
Yeah, I mean, I think like you mentioned with stress, that we know that stress isn't just like the psychological stress that we feel from work or family, right? Mm-hmm. It's our brain doesn't know the difference. It doesn't have a filter system for stress. It just knows that this isn't a safe place and hormones aren't the priority here. Mm-hmm. So what we have to look at is, what are some things that we can do that are also going to bring us joy? And how sometimes I think people feel overwhelmed that focusing on their health or even learning about like these subjects like hormones is so overwhelming. They're like, I'm stressed out even like learning about this. Where do I even start, right? Mm-hmm. But once you start to really have a framework and a really clear idea of what you should be doing every day, it becomes so much less stressful. Mm-hmm. All of this becomes less stressful. And I always tell people, I'm like, your diet shouldn't take up all of your mental real estate. Like,
no.
Your life should take up your mental real estate. And if you're constantly having to think about, what should I be eating? Is this good for me? What should I be getting at the grocery store? I don't know if this is the right option. All of those questions that come up for a lot of us, then that's not conducive to long-term healthy stress balance, right? And having a more clear-cut idea of what your needs are is going to help to be able to remove that stress state that you feel. But doing things that bring you joy, you know, and not for any purpose of making anything, of doing anything that's beneficial. I am myself a very like go, 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 doer type person. But I have to stop myself every week and say, like, what have you done that's bringing you joy? You know, and like cooking, for example, it's something that brings me joy. And it's also bringing me nutritional improvement. So it's a win-win, right? Yeah. Walking, it's something that brings me joy. And it's also helping me achieve more activity. So again, it's a win-win. So where can we find areas in our life that like truly bring us joy, that help us be more in the present moment, that maybe also help us improve whatever we're trying to do with our health? And those are really the things that we want to hold on to, because not only are they going to make your life simpler, they're going to slow you down, and they're going to bring you more into the present. When we're in the present, we're not in a high cortisol stress state.
Yes, permission to play, permission to find joy, recognizing that it really is helping you to optimize health. And it's important. We lose so much of that as we become adults and have to pay taxes and like
do all this adult stuff
that we have to do. But one of the things that I always like to work on with clients is, what does creativity look like for you? What does play look like for you? And are you able to make more room for that? Because it is health. It is wellness. What does your supplement routine look like?
It shifts. And I always tell clients that we work with that you're going to be on the most supplements when we first get your testing back.
Okay.
Because we're using those supplements therapeutically to fix what's imbalanced. Just like you would use a pharmaceutical to shift something in the body, we're using food as medicine. And sometimes we need to concentrate that food down so that we have higher dosages of it so that it can really shift how the body is working. But when it comes to a maintenance on a day-to-day basis, it should be a very short list of where do you need to fill in the gaps that your diet isn't meeting or your lifestyle is draining you of, right? So for example, like I got some labs back a couple months ago and I had a couple of antioxidants I was low in. I had a little bit of oxidative stress and my selenium levels were low. My vitamin D was like a little bit lower than I wanted it to be. So right now, every day I'm taking a certain type of selenium to help support my selenium levels and my antioxidant reserves. I'm on a certain type of vitamin E that's really important for helping with the oxidative stress. I'm on B6, and I am I take fish oil every day. And mm-hmm. I really think that everyone should be taking fish oil, because Agreed. I can't tell you how many low fish oil tests I've seen in my lifetime. And really, you know, omega-3s are more of like a hormone and how they work in our body than they are like a nutrient, just some very similar to vitamin D. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly powerful for the way that our hormones function. So those are kind of like my essentials, but it's personalized and it might not look the same like 3 months from now. But say that I'm like in a stressful season. Like last night, I knew I wasn't going to sleep well because I was traveling and I was going to be worried about oversleeping this morning. And so I was at Whole Foods and they had this little like reishi chamomile tincture that had like a milligram of melatonin in it. I was like, perfect. It's like not a ton of melatonin. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a little bit to help with my circadian rhythm. And it also has some of these calming adaptogenic herbs in it. And so I took that last night. But that's not something I would take every night. I'm really using it on like an as-need basis. Mm-hmm. I'm really just kind of checking in with myself and saying, what's going on? What are you experiencing right now? And where do we need a little bit of extra support? Mm-hmm. And then using supplements to really fill in the gaps there.
Love that. Do you have any thoughts on Ozempic?
Yeah. So the way that Ozempic works is it's a GLP-1 inhibitor, and GLP-1 is actually a hormone that's in our stomach. And essentially Ozempic slows down your how food gets absorbed into the body, and it works by helping to regulate blood sugar levels. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people, when they are on Ozempic, they're like, I don't have any cravings. Mm-hmm. I feel so much more stable throughout the day. That's because their blood sugar is improving. And you can do that through changing the way that you eat and the way that you structure your meals. You don't need a pharmaceutical to do that for you.
Right.
So that's one thing that people notice. And then the second is that because it slows down the function of the gut, that's one of the reasons why people stay full longer, because food's moving through the digestive system slower. But then what happens is we start to see an uptick in GI issues, because if food isn't moving as fast as it should, then food has more time to ferment. And that's when bacteria start to overgrow into the small intestine. And then that's when people start to deal with things like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which causes a lot of bloating and burping and flatulence and constipation and you name it. And it creates this whole catalyst for GI issues, because food isn't moving through the GI tract as it's meant to.
Okay. Which is also, remember, our gut is connected to our brain via the vagus nerve. Mm-hmm. So it's going to impact your stress levels, anxiety, brain fog, all of these things as well. When our gut health is off, that's off. And then correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't serotonin primarily created in the gut? Mm-hmm. So then is that overgrowth going to impact the amount of serotonin that you're producing, or could it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know that even with like hormone conditions, that dysbiosis, which is essentially your microbiome, the bacteria in your gut, aren't in balance. Like you've got too much bad stuff, not enough good stuff, whatever it might be, that it's a huge driver of metabolic health. So like insulin sensitivity, we know that a lot of people that have issues like diabetes, polycystic ovary syndrome, that those are huge things that are tied to the gut. 20%-ish of your thyroid hormones get converted in your gut. Mm. So when we're talking about like all of these thyroid related things, the gut plays a huge role in how all of that is functioning. So yeah, and neurotransmitters, especially serotonin, are mainly made in the gut.
Okay. For anybody who's listening right now, who's like, balancing your blood sugar levels, how do you do that? That is one of the primary things that we focus on in the Food Freedom Program. And it's such a game changer for cravings, for binge eating, for the constant food thoughts that you may be experiencing. Mm-hmm. When we're ebbing and flowing between states of extreme hunger, of course, the brain's going to be thinking about food and wondering where it's going to get its next meal, which causes a lot of thinking about food, causes us to make different choices when we're picking foods in that state of starvation or that state of extreme hunger, which intermittent fasting leads us to. So, you know, all of these things, there is support out there, and there are alternative ways of navigating this that don't include severe restriction, that don't include trying to figure out all of your hormones on your own. I can't stress enough, for me, in my health and wellness journey over the last 20 years, having somebody by your side who knows how to support you in this and who can help hold your hand through it, who has a system and some structures in place and some success stories, and ideally someone who's lived through it as well, is really helpful, I think. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
Where can everybody find you?
Yeah, so my private practice is called Functional Fueling. And so our website is functionalfueling.com, over on Instagram at functional.fueling. I have a podcast called the Strength and Hormones Podcast, where we talk a lot about hormones and nutrition and all these women's health related conversations. And then we do, you know, one-on-one support. We do like lab testing packages where we do like hormone testing packages. And then we also have a group program called Inflammation Hormone-y, where it's all about really addressing the root causes of what's causing your hormones to go bonkers.
Beautiful. I always end the show by asking if you could leave one message that was going to land in the inbox of every single human's email, what would you say?
I would say to check in with yourself and really ask like what brings you joy every single day and allow it to be something different and for that to ebb and flow. But to make sure that every day you're asking yourself that, because I really do believe that the more present we are and the more connected we are to our body and our intuition, the more that we make the right decisions for ourselves, and it's for our internal health, not necessarily for the external, and the external follow suit, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you're worried about the way your skin looks, the way your body looks, whatever it might be, just remember that it always starts internally and that the internal reflects externally. And how do we start supporting our internal function? It's by asking ourselves, like, where do we need support today?
I love that.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Please take a moment to rate, review, or follow on your favorite podcast app, and share this episode with someone that you think could benefit. Join the Raw Beauty Talks community at Raw Beauty Talks. And remember, it's your story, your body, your mind, and your journey. So think about what resonates with you and leave the rest behind. I'll see you next week.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell podcast, therapist and mom of three. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.